In Hebrews 11, beginning in verse 24, the Bible said, "By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward." I'm interested in verse number 25 tonight. "Choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season." We spent a little while one night, I think the first night of the meeting, whichever night that was that I started, I think it was Monday, on verse number 26. And we talked a little bit about a choice concerning affluence. If we were to spend time in verse 24, we would talk about a choice concerning affection. Brother Davison preached a little bit about this family relationship and mentioned the verses where the Lord said that we have to hate our father and our mother and our brother and our sister. But if you go back to the Old Testament and read where the Bible said that Jacob married two sisters, Rachel and Leah, and the Bible says this in one verse, he loved Rachel more than Leah. Then the next verse says, and when God saw that Leah was hated. Now that's not what it said in the verse before. It said he loved her more than he loved Leah. But the next verse said he hated her. So it's talking about a relative, the relationship or the difference between the love that he had. That's what God's talking about. That we love him more than we love anyone else. We find that taught to us in verse 24. But in verse 25, we have a choice that Moses must make concerning suffering affliction. I want to talk to you about that for a little while. We might say tonight when we look in the life of Moses that he chose a cross when he could have had a crown. We might say he chose persecution when he could have had prestige. We might say that he chose Israel's slavery when he could have had Egypt's sovereignty. We have a man here, according to the Bible, in the previous verse, the Bible said when he was come to years, he made this choice. The Bible tells us in the book of Acts, Stephen said when he was full 40 years old. So Moses is not a young man. Moses is not here suddenly overwhelmed by some passion. He is not suddenly just influenced to make a rash choice. Moses is a 40-year-old man. Moses has seen both sides of the equation, and Moses said, better to suffer with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. That's a choice we'd better learn to make. We'd better get it nailed down in our hearts that it's better to suffer than it is to sin. Now, Moses is going to make that choice. And I want you to remember this now, and I want you to think about this as we talk about this choice, that this suffering that Moses is going to endure was not thrust upon him. Sometimes in our Christian life, suffering is thrust upon us and we have no choice in the matter. I think some years ago, if I remember correctly, I preached here on living with, not in, but living with the will of God. And sometimes it is the will of God for us to suffer, and we must learn how to rejoice and how to live and how to be fruitful even in the suffering that God deems necessary for our life. Sometimes it's easier to live in the will of God than it is to live with the will of God. But this is not a matter of suffering thrust upon Moses. This is a matter of Moses choosing to suffer rather than enjoy the pleasures of sin. I want to talk to you about that choice for a little while. Because sometime in our Christian life it will come down to this. We'll have to choose between sinning and suffering. Sometimes when you make the choice that God would have you make, I know the joy boys on the television tell you if you get in the will of God, no trouble, no sickness, no difficulty, but that is not what the Bible says. The Bible said, yea, and all them that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. The Bible tells us in the book of Philippians, unto you it is given in the behalf of Christ not only to believe on Him, but to suffer for His sake. The Bible said, beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened unto you. I used to travel some with evangelist Billy Kelly. And I heard a lot of stories, but I remember him telling about driving one night in the middle of the night in his old Cadillac. He's driving along and he's trying to find something to listen to help him stay awake. If you were ever around Brother Kelly much, he was about 6'5" and on a good day weighed around 400 pounds, 380. And when he'd sit down, he's the kind of fellow, if you'd ask him, what do you take to go to sleep? He'd have said, I take a seat. And I'd ridden with him several times, and he'd get riding along, and all of a sudden he'd be driving because he never would let me drive. And all of a sudden the window would start going up and down. Then the radio would be on, and he'd be going like this with his hand, like he's leaning, and I knew he was getting sleepy. And so he was telling me about driving in the night, and he's getting sleepy, and he's trying to find something to keep him awake. He's going on the radio, and he found a man. He said he was preaching, sort of. He said his doctrine wasn't exactly right, but he's preaching sort of. And he said, oh, I'm going to listen to him. So the fella got to preaching, and at the end of the message, the fella said, now folks, we have some blessed willow limbs. And if you will send us an offering, we'll send you one of our blessed willow limbs. And when you get it in your home, God will straighten out all of your financial difficulty. So Brother Kelly said he talked about those willow limbs for a little while. And then he said this. Now, folks, we need to hear from you. We're behind in our radio bill, and we really need your help. Brother Kelly said, I looked at the radio and said out loud as though someone could hear me, why don't you use one of your willow limbs? You say, well, that's silly. It's no more silly then listen to somebody tell you that if you live for God, you never have pain, and you never have financial reverse, and you never get your heart broke, and you never have trouble, and you never have difficulty. I'm telling you, in the Christian life, it is part and parcel of the Christian life. Amidst the joy that is in our heart, there is suffering. And so Moses understands it, and he chooses to suffer with the people of God. I want to say three things about that choice. And these three things I hope will help us make the choice to suffer with the people of God rather than to sin. Now, when I look at this word rather in verse 25, I'm reminded that there's a contrast here. There is a contrast. When you use that word rather, I'll do this rather than that. There's a contrast here. I want us to notice the contrast. First of all, I want us to notice the when of suffering. Now, the contrast is not in the when. You say, preacher, what do you mean? W-H-E-N, the time of it, the when of it. Now, notice what he says. He said, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. He makes an emphasis that the pleasure of sin is only for a season. I hear people say, well, there's no pleasure in sin. Are you kidding me? If there was no pleasure in sin, I wouldn't have any trouble with it. Nor would you. Nor would we need to preach on it. If there was no pleasure in sin, I'm telling you, we'd all be living a wholly separated life. We wouldn't have trouble. We wouldn't even have to worry about it. If there weren't any pleasure in it, we'd stay away from it. But there is pleasure in it. The trouble is, it doesn't last. It's only for a season. And you know, and I know that seasons always change. I hear them say, well, we've had such a long winter, I don't know if summer will ever come. It's coming. It always comes. It always will come. God promised us in the book of Genesis that it'll always be as long as the earth stands. And so the season will change. The problem is nobody knows exactly when the season's going to change. I hear them say, well, today is the first day of winter. And I look outside and the sun's shining. It's 68 degrees in Michigan. Down here it'd be 102. And I say to myself, doesn't look like winter to me. Then they'll say, well, today is the first day of summer. And I'll go out. I lived in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. In the first part of June, there was ice. There was still ice floating in Lake Superior. So I say, well, it's the first day of summer. And I go outside, wrap up in my coat, put my hat down over my head, take my scarf and wrap it around my neck. It don't look like summer to me. I don't think they really know when summer starts and when winter starts. And you do not know, dear friend, when the season of pleasure in sin is going to end. You say, well, I've got it covered. Nobody knows about it. I'm slick. No. It just hadn't come a change of season yet. But there will come a change of season. I was always intrigued preaching through the book of Jonah when Jonah preached that message. And here's what he said. He said, yet 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown. Overthrown, same word that's used when God overthrew the cities of the plain. What he's saying is fire and brimstone's getting ready to rain from heaven upon Nineveh. And here's what he said to them. He didn't say, if you don't straighten up, you're going to get caught. He didn't say to them, if you're not careful, you're going to slip up and God's going to... He said, you've got 40 days. Now you think about that. It's almost as though God pulled back the curtains of heaven and let Jonah look on his desk, and there's his yearly planning calendar, and on 60 days from that day, or 40 days, I'm losing my mind. You know how many days it was. 40 days, wasn't it? Yet 40 days? Okay, good. You know, never mind. And so, right on there on that 40 days from that, here's a little note on God's calendar. Judgment! For Nineveh. I wonder tonight if God would let us look on his calendar what it would say about you. You say, preacher, nobody knows. God knows. God knows. Yet 40 days. It's not that you're slick. You see, the season just hasn't changed. But it will change. And that pleasure, the writer of Proverbs said, at the last it biteth like an adder, stingeth like a serpent. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. So the season's going to change. The season, the pleasure of sin is only for a season. But now wait a minute. We're talking about not only the pleasure of sin, but we're talking about the suffering of affliction. Now here's what Peter said. 1 Peter 1:6, wherein you greatly rejoice, though now, listen to me now, though now for a season, if need be, ye are in heaviness through manifold temptations. 1 Peter 5:10, after that ye have suffered a while. You say, well, preacher, the pleasure of sin is only for a season. Yep, but the suffering of this life is also only for a season. Weeping may endure for the night, but joy cometh in the morning. You say, well, preacher, when will my suffering be over? I cannot tell you that. Just like I can't tell you when the pleasure of sin will end, I can't tell you when the affliction of suffering will end, but I can say this. If it doesn't end somewhere in this life, it will land when we leave this world. We're headed for a land that's fairer than day, where there is no pain and no sorrow and no suffering and no death, and we'll be in the presence of Jesus and there'll be no suffering there. We're headed for a land where suffering is unknown. It's not mentioned, probably not even remembered when we get to that place. So the contrast is not in the when, the timing of it. So where is the contrast? The contrast is in two places. Number one, the contrast is in, first of all, the worth of suffering as opposed to the worth of sin. How much is sin worth? Well, its pleasure lasts only for a season. But I thought if we wanted to find out how much suffering is worth, we should check with somebody, or how much pleasure is worth, we should check with somebody who tried it. His name was Solomon. And he tried it. And when he tried it, here's what he said. He said that he gave himself to pleasure. He said, I'll try pleasure. And he came up with this conclusion. He said, it's vanity. You know what? You know how I like to describe vanity? Did you ever blow bubbles? When you was a child, you had that little bottle, and you stick that thing into that wand, you blow that bubble out, and it's so pretty, and it kind of floats in the air, and if the sun is shining just right, there's different colors, and it's beautiful, circular shape, and you look at it, and you say, man, that is lovely. I'm going to take that home, keep it forever. And when you get your hand on it, what does it do? It pops, and it's gone. That's like the pleasure of sin. You look at it and you say, well, if I can just keep it forever. But it's vain. It's vanity. It's not real. It's not true. It won't last forever. It can't be kept. It's going to turn into wickedness and sorrow. It's going to turn into all. It's going to turn into something you never thought it would turn into. And you know, people say, well, preacher, you know, maybe I have to pay for my sin, but it'll be like this. No, it won't be like you think it's going to be. It won't be what you plan for it to be. It will be completely beyond anything your imagination can come up with until you say, whoa, why did I ever start? Sin has no real worth. But what about suffering? Does it have any worth? Well, let's think about it. In 1 Peter 5:10, Peter said, but the God of all grace, who hath called us unto his eternal glory by Christ Jesus, after that ye have suffered a while, make you perfect, establish, strengthen, settle you. That tells me suffering is worthwhile. It'll help make me perfect. It'll establish me. It'll strengthen me. Oh, it may look like it's making me weak in the outer man, but it's strengthening that inner man, making me more like Christ, making me more determined to live for God. It'll settle me in the things of God. But there's more than that. Here's what Peter said in 1 Peter 4, verse 14. He said, if you be reproached for the name of Christ, happy are you. Now listen to this little phrase. For the Spirit of glory and God resteth upon you. Now, preacher, I've been traveling 30-some years. I'm in a different church every week. I see a lot of people. I try not to be judgmental of people, but I notice people. I notice their countenance. I notice how they speak and how they act. I've always been that way. I've always just noticed people. I'll get in a church and there'll be somebody who has the glory of God resting upon them. It's in their countenance. It's in the way they serve, the way it's just noticeable. And invariably I'll say to the preacher, tell me about so and so. And you know what he'll tell me about? They're suffering. He'll say, well, they've been through this. And they've been through that. And I have come to the conclusion, as Peter did, that when we suffer for the cause of Christ and we take it patiently in the will of God, there is a glory that will rest upon us that is noticeable. Did you ever think about this? If Moses stays in the palace, he'll get up one morning, he'll put on the golden crown. He'll put around his neck the golden necklace. He'll put on his ring, or on his fingers, jeweled rings. He'll don that golden thread tunic, and he'll walk out into the sunlight, and the sun will glisten off that crown. Glisten off those jeweled fingers, and glisten off that golden chain necklace and glisten off the golden threads in that tunic. And while he's out there in the sunlight, he'll shine. But when he goes home at night, he'll take off his shine. He'll lay down his crown and take off his jeweled rings and take off his golden necklace and his golden threaded tunic, and he'll sit down and he'll have no shine. But Moses didn't choose that life. Moses chose living for God and suffering with the people of God. And one day he went up on the mountain and he got alone with God. And when it came down off the mountain, his face shone. The Bible said it shone so brightly with the glory of God that Moses couldn't take it off. He couldn't say, well, I don't want this on me right now. He couldn't take it off. They had to cover him with a veil because his face shone. And I thought to myself, that's the way it is when you suffer patiently, when you choose to stand with God no matter what, then God will put his glory on you, and it won't be something you put on and take off. It'll be something God rests upon you. I used to go to a meeting and two ladies would get up and sing, a mother and a daughter, meeting up in North Carolina. And I'm telling you, when they sang, it didn't matter what song they sang. It didn't matter if it was fast or slow. It didn't matter if it was a new song or an old song. It didn't matter if it was out of the newfangled songbook or out of the old red back. It didn't matter what they sang. When they sang, the glory of God rested upon them. When they sang, you knew they'd been with God. When they sang, you knew that God was working in your heart. There was a glory about that mother and that daughter. But I noticed that they never came early to the service and they never stayed after. I noticed when we had fellowships, they very seldom would come to the fellowship. They mostly were just there during the services. And so one day I said to one of the men in the church, I said, what about? And I named their names and I said, you know, they never come early and they never stay late and they're very seldom at the fellowships. I said, how come that is? Why is that? He said, well, he said the husband and the father won't let them. He doesn't love God and he's involved in wickedness, and he gives them permission to come, but they have to come, and they can only even come when the service starts, and as soon as the service is over, they have to go home. He said on Sunday morning, they'll have to go home after the morning service, make sure his meal is cooked and prepared for him when he gets up out of after his night of wickedness, and they'll have to clean up the mess. And he said their home life is not the kind of home life you'd want. And I stood back and I thought to myself, they are taking their stand for God, and they're suffering affliction in their own home, in the relationship of marriage, in the relationship of family. I don't know how it all got started. I don't know all about that. I just know they're taking their stand. And I want to say to you, the glory of God was resting upon them in that affliction. And I want to say to you, friend, when you're in affliction and when you suffer, don't tell God it's not fair. Don't look at God and complain. Don't get angry with God. But submit yourself in humbleness to the God of the universe and the God that loves you. Let him rest his glory upon you that he might show himself glorious through your life. The contrast is not in the when, and it's not in the worth. The contrast is in the worth, but then thirdly, the contrast is found in the weight. The weight, how heavy is it? The weight of sin and the weight of suffering. Which one carries more weight? Sin or suffering? Well, here's what the Bible said. Paul said, for our light affliction. Now let's hold on here a moment. If you want to look with me, let's find out what Paul would call light affliction. 2 Corinthians 11. What would Paul consider light affliction? Verse 23. Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, stripes above measure, in prisons more frequent, in deaths oft. of the Jews, five times received I 40 stripes, save one. Thrice was I beaten with rods, once was I stoned, thrice I suffered shipwreck, a night and a day I have been in the deep. In journeyings often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils by mine own countrymen, in perils by the heathen, in perils in the city, excuse me, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren. In weariness and painfulness, in watchings often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. Beside those things that are without, that which come upon me daily, the care of all the churches, light affliction. That's what Paul called light affliction. 40 stripes save one. Shipwreck, beaten, in perils by robbers, and in perils of the Jew, his own countrymen, in perils off fastings, nakedness, weariness. He said that's light affliction. We are a spoiled people. Paul called that light affliction. Light affliction. But then here's what he went on to say about it. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment. You say, preacher, it seemed like a while to me. What is your life? It is even a vapor. Appear for a little time, vanisheth away. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. Now I'm telling you, I'm stuck on that verse. Paul said that light affliction worketh for us. So that affliction that I may suffer, I thought it was working against me. Paul said, no, it's not working against us. It's working for us. You remember Jacob, when those boys came home from Egypt and Simeon had been kept, Joseph, he thought, was already dead, and Joseph, who was the prime minister, wanted them to bring Benjamin, you remember? Do you remember what he said to them boys? Me, have you bereaved of my children? Joseph is not, and Simeon is not. And ye will take Benjamin away also. All these things are against me. Not one of those things was against him. All those things were for him. This light affliction worketh for us. Well, what's it working for us? It's working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. Now, I'm just taking Paul at his word. I'm just taking the Bible at what it said. Looks to me like the Bible is saying that suffering, the afflictions of this life, that I will take patiently in the will of God for the glory of God. My glory that I'm going to experience in the next world is directly related to how I suffer and take it in this world. It worketh. Far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. You know, when you get talking about weight, Paul will also say this. When I think of weight, I think of scales. And Paul will also say this. He says, as long as we're talking about scales and about weight, he said, for I reckon the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. How was it the apostles would live and they would be crucified upside down and stoned to death, and Old Testament prophets sawn asunder, and John banished to the Isle of Patmos, and yet while he's in the Isle of Patmos he said, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day. How is it they would take that suffering? Because they understood that it was working for them a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. They understood there was another world. They understood this isn't all there is. Our problem is we're living for the wrong world. We're wanting to be comfortable here and have it all here when we ought to be living for Him and looking over yonder. I read this little story one day when I was studying the Scottish Covenanters. They were outlawed for their preaching. And if they were captured, it was immediate death. So one Sunday morning, they were meeting and going to meet, and they couldn't meet like we meet because it was illegal. They had to meet in barns and out in the woods or wherever they could find. So one Sunday morning, a little girl, a little lass, a little Scottish lass was headed for the Covenanters' meeting. And as she walked down the lane, the soldiers, the dragoons, captured her. They stopped her and began to question her. They knew it was Sunday. They knew she wasn't headed for the state church. And they said, "Lass, where are you headed on this day?" Well, she was a Christian. She didn't want to lie to them. But if she told them where she was going, she'd put the lives of everyone of the congregation in jeopardy. So she thought a minute, looked up at that sergeant and said, "Sir, my elder brother has died. And they're reading the will." "And I go to see what he has left for me." I believe she had her eyes on another world, on riches that the world cannot understand. You know, I've heard this little phrase: "He's so heavenly minded, he's no earthly good." I want to tell you something. I've never met anybody like that. I have been myself so earthly minded that I was no heavenly good more times than I want to admit. But I do not think tonight that we could get so heavenly minded we'd be no earthly good. I think the more heavenly minded we are, the more earthly good we'll be. And the more we could set our affections on things above, and the more we could look at the goal and think about Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, and the more we could, like Paul, think of that glory that awaits us in heaven, the more we do that, the easier it will be. The more we can, the more strength we'll have when the day of suffering comes our way. And it is coming. It is coming. Maybe already here in your life, but it is coming to all of us. But if we could just remember, it's a light affliction when compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. Then maybe we can make the choice Moses made. Choose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Let's pray, Father.